Welcome to the Housing Matters Podcast, brought to you by the California Association of Realtors and the Center for California Real Estate.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for another Housing Matters Podcast. It's your favorite data nerds, back with everything you need to know about the housing market and the economy. My name is Jordan Levine. I'm the chief economist here at the California Association of Realtors. And I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Oscar Way, your amazing deputy chief economist. Hey, Oscar.
Hey, everyone. Hey, Jordan. Hope everyone is doing well. And I'm glad to be here to talk with Jordan and with on another podcast.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. And, you know, we've seen just kind of more of the same. I haven't really gone back to the drawing board and made you redo the forecast or anything crazy yet, although we now see that it's kind of just slow and steady. And I think the recovery is going to take a while. There's affordability issues. Interest rates are still kind of all over the map. Of course, homeowners are still locked in too. And we see that inventory remains very tight. And then there's question marks about the economy. On the one hand, you have folks that wonder if the economy is going to slow down, which might, you know, ultimately be the best thing for rates. But there's also just these economic indicators that continue to overperform, and inflation, I think, that will be slow to come down as well. And it's kind of weird that we find ourselves rooting for a slower economy. But that's kind of, I think, especially where the bond market is. And so we can talk about all of that stuff as we talk about rates. And then we can just wind up with maybe where the market's at, because seeing some shifts in just the last couple of weeks. We were up at 7.5% rates there. And so we'll talk about what that's meant in terms of sales and prices for us here in California, what it's going to mean for the spring home buying season. And then, you know, also looking at new home sales, because one of the things that we've seen, and I think we saw again recently, is that, you know, as rates jump up and that existing home sales market starts to struggle, then you see that the kind of new home sales and the builders are able to step in and kind of take up some of that slack with concessions and a lot of other stuff. So there's lots of stuff to talk about that I think really captures the environment that we're out there. But let's talk about affordability, because this is going to be one of those long-standing issues, and it's not going to be one of those things that comes and goes with rates. And there we still have challenges.
Yes, we definitely do. And, you know, if we figured this month, it's Fair Housing Month, you know, let's talk a little bit about housing affordability. Let's take a look at how housing affordability could affect, you know, different ethnicity. And, you know, we have been seeing affordability actually declining in the last, 12 months, 18 months or so, because of interest rates being high, jumping from 3% to 7%. But obviously, housing affordability also is, you know, affected or affecting different ethnic group a little differently. You know, with interest rate rising, we just released our housing affordability by ethnicity index, and it shows that you know, it's, housing affordability continues to deteriorate, you know, for all ethnic groups. I think it went from somewhere around 30%-ish or so a few years ago, now down to maybe about 18% now, meaning 18%, only 18% of the households can afford to buy a median price home. And the problem is even more dire for Hispanic, Latino, and Blacks.
Yeah. And we're talking about, you know, sub 10%, and even at 18% for a statewide number, you know, we're talking about 82% then that can't afford the median price. And so that's not an all-time low. I think back during the housing bubble, we hit 12 or 11 even or something like that, where 90% of people couldn't afford. But we're getting there because we have both the rates, but also the double whammy of rising prices. And so, you know, I think for folks that don't have that generational wealth, and why we always, you know, evangelize for home ownership being so important, it's not just so that you get your foot on the property ladder, your kids do better in school and all of that stuff, but then you can help that future generation also become homeowners as well. And so these folks that are more reliant on mortgages, are, you know, more impacted. And, you know, again, this all comes down to supply and demand, and we could talk about supply and demand. The good news is, even as affordability overall deteriorated, we saw some of the affordability gaps shrink, right? So those differences between races aren't as pronounced. And so we are making some headway in terms of leveling the playing field. But I think it just speaks to our broader challenge of, you know, affordability prices, that we've essentially commoditized the housing market with such low direction again. And that's true for all groups, but we have at least seen some progress on the kind of level playing field front.
Yeah, I think, you know, the gap, you know, kind of narrowed a little bit from 2022 and 2023, you know, it shrinked slightly. Of course, it's still a wide gap for now. And it has a lot to do with, of course, there's income disparity. Of course, there's also the fact that we are seeing, you know, maybe there are more first time buyers in Black and Hispanic group. So they have to actually put up a bigger down payment. There are a lot of different reasons for the disparity and also the gap. And of course, I think, Jordan, you mentioned earlier, the gap could actually affect, you know, wealth accumulation. And we can see from other studies also that it is definitely affecting the generation wealth. So, you know, hopefully, of course, you know, prices will not go up, you know, by a whole lot this year. But at the same time, and I think very importantly, if interest rates start coming down, I think things will start working out a little bit better. So let's take a look at, you know, interest rates. Jordan, what do you think, you know, interest rates will be doing now for the last couple of weeks or so? You know, we have been seeing, or at least last 2-3 weeks or so, you know, interest rates have been climbing a little bit. At least since late March. So do you think, you know, it will continue? I know inflation continues to be an issue, but what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, rates are, they've been all over the map, and they play right into the affordability stuff that we were just talking about. All of the economic data, as we'll mention in a minute here, has been really strong. We had a good, strong, you know, February and March jobs report. We had the inflation number where things went back up, and both in the headline number on a year-to-year basis, and I think core went up as well. And you saw the bond market totally freaked out, right? Because all these rate cuts that they've been banking on, right? And just are kind of never, are a little bit further off than they always think they are. And then you see these kind of reversals in the bond market that drove mortgage rates higher. I do think that, you know, we've probably seen the top still. Again, we were up at 8.25 at one point last year. I think a week ago, we were at 7.5. They've inched down by about 10 basis points, 12 basis points, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Since then, and I think it's this violation of the bond market expectations, right? Is that the numbers come out, they're really strong. The Fed says, hey, we might not cut rates till the second half of the year, which, by the way, we have kind of been saying that all along. But, you know, the bond market was hoping that they would come quicker. And then you see the 10-year goes back up close to 5%, the 2 years hovering at about 5%. But I do think if you look at the daily stuff, the 10-year has started to plateau a little bit at about 4.7-ish, something in that range. And so, you know, I think the 10-year's about where it should be, given the Fed saying they're going to probably bring the Fed funds rate down to 5%. We should probably have like a 5-something percent Fed funds rate, or excuse me, 10-year. And so I think, again, the bond market's just kind of waking up to smell the roses that these cuts aren't as close as they are. But I do think that you know, we're going to see rates in the high sixes and sevens until at least the second half of the year, and we get some of those cuts. That's why I think our forecast has, you know, us getting down into the, you know, 6.2, 6.3 range by the end of the year after the cuts. You know, and it's just because this inflation stuff is going to be slow to go away. The shelter costs, you know, are a big piece of the inflation story, and rents are still strong and home prices are actually still rising, and unemployment still very low. And so between housing costs and wage costs, you know, it's hard to get rid of this last bit of inflation. And so again, everyone thinks the bond market's this, you know, magical, fantastical, hard to understand, but it's all supply and demand, right? It's all about, it's like, I look at bonds, like I look at the housing market. And if you look at it through bond prices instead of bond rates, you know, it's like when people get bullish that the Fed's going to cut, everyone wants to buy bonds and the price goes up and the rates go down. And when they realize the cuts aren't going to happen, then no one wants to buy the bonds and the rate goes up and the price goes down. So this is just them missing the boat on when the cuts, I think, were going to actually happen. I don't think we're going to see a surge back to some, you know, higher number that we haven't already seen. But I do think it's smart and prudent to plan for the rates to stay, to be a very incremental and slow creep down.
Yeah, I know, you know, we talked about inflation, we talked about, you know, how it affects the bond market. I do think, like what you said, people might have overexpected, you know, what the Federal Reserve could be doing in the first half of the year. We know that, of course, inflation is going to be sticky. We know that the headline numbers, a lot of time, the headline numbers are driven by, of course, what's happening in the energy and the food sector. We have heard that, you know, as far as goods inflations are concerned, you know, it has come down. Of course, we still have service inflation. People are still going out eating. And of course, you know, when we go out to eat, we know notice on the menu that prices have gone up. So it's going to take some time. There might be speculation that, okay, well, maybe in June, we may not necessarily see, you know, a price cut. I think the odds are still a little bit lower compared to, you know, a few weeks ago. But do we still believe that maybe in July, maybe in September, we will see some cuts in rates and inflation? I do believe some of those other indicators suggest that we might have some softening. Maybe it will take some time. So that's why it may not necessarily be in June. But I do believe that, like what you said, we might have already topped out in terms of the 10-year treasury yields. You know, there might be speculation of how, you know, how high it could actually be. But I think, you know, we are seeing some signs that it's plateauing. So hopefully things will start getting a little bit better in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and I'm not ruling out seeing a 5% 10-year again. You know, it could go up. That's only 30, 40 basis points away from where it is right now. But I just don't think you're going to see it go a heck of a lot higher than what we've already seen. We've already had a 10-year that was at 5%, you know, at one point last year. And so, again, I think it's just an expectations game. But I think it's all contingent on where the economy really goes. And that is one area where I think I've been a little bit surprised at just how resilient consumers have been in particular. And I know I've been talking about this for a long time and it's failed to materialize. And that was true again in March, but consumers just keep spending, despite the fact that it's almost entirely gone on the credit card now and that those credit cards are increasingly delinquent. Retail sales were up and they were up more than anyone thought they would be.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, well, in March and April, we will probably see some slowdown because of tax season. And I was a little off by that. You know, I was very surprised with now retail sales did exceed expectation in March. Now, I don't think it actually exceeded by a whole lot in March, but it did exceed it. And consumers continue to show that they are willing to spend. And that's what surprised me a little bit. And when you take in, now part of it could be because of increase in prices in energy. When you take out, you know, those inflation, we're still seeing on a year-over-year basis growing by retail sales growing by about 3%, 3.4%, I think. And that surprised me a little bit. I still think that it will soften up a little bit in April, May, or maybe in June. As you said, because people are putting their spending on credit cards, and credit cards cost of borrowing is not cheap. I mean, it's gone up quite a bit. So I think at some point they will have to slow down, right?
I mean, the logic is that, eventually we're going to have to pay for some of this stuff, which is kind of what underlies the slowdown in the economy. Not really a big retrenchment, but at least a plateauing where folks would stop and catch their breath. And I'm kind of surprised by the strength in consumers when you look at it from a kind of balance sheet standpoint. But I had an outreach yesterday and I stopped by Costco and it was like a Tuesday, at like noon, and Costco was packed. So it's like when you look at the financial numbers, you become worried. But then it's like when you go to the stores, there's, very much a feeling that people are living high on the hog still and buying lots of expensive furniture and all of that stuff. So, I think that both the strength of consumer spending is keeping the labor market strong, right? Because we need servers and waiters and chefs and hotel staff to support the service sector that's still growing and under employed and all of that stuff. And that keeps people spending, I guess. So, but the rates do have an impact on the market. And we have seen that when, the rates jump up pretty dramatically after a pretty solid rebound in the first couple of months of this year, we kind of tapered off a bit in March as those rates started to go up, and we saw it in the pending too. So don't get too excited about April being a big blockbuster number, but just give us a rundown of kind of how the rates rippled through the market and how that compares to like where we were in the first couple months when rates were actually coming down a bit.
Yeah, and in the first couple of months we were doing, great. We were seeing some improvement on a year-over-year basis. But in the third month of the year, in March, we actually have a decline in sales by about 4.4% compared to last year. Now it we it, ha it has gone has come down a little bit. It didn't hit the level that we had at the trough, like 12 months ago or a while back. But it did come down a
Right.
little bit because of rates, as you mentioned, and also because of, even though the supply has improved, and we're enjoy, seeing that improvement in supply, but it's still at a very tight level. With interest rate coming in at about, I think, in late February or March, it might have come back up to maybe about 7% or so as far as 30-year fixed rate. So it did, hit the market a little bit, and it also is affecting pending sales slightly. Pending sales, even though it's showing, open escrow sales still increased by about 1%, but it's slower than what I would have expected. And when you take into account some seasonality factor, you would hope that, pending sales would go up. But it's still, encouraging, as I mentioned, that we are seeing, active listings, not just active listings because of fewer people buying homes, but new active listings coming into the market and increasing by, double digits for the third straight month. So I think it will hopefully pay out, play out well, in the later part of the home buying season.
Yeah, and I think, eventually people have to move regardless of what rate they're in, and that's important to keep in mind. There's been a lot of people getting divorced, having babies, and all of that stuff. And some people, I think it's like 18%, something like that, that are up above 5% rate. So we will see more supply, and supply is really probably the main limiting factor at this point. I think even with the slowdown in sales and the jump in rates, it's important to note that we didn't go back to those, very winter lows. People still want to buy. The writing's on the wall. The prices are still going up, not going down. I think fewer and fewer people are expecting the foreclosure crisis and things like that. But this is also why we said, don't throw your business in cruise control, because even though we had a couple of good months where we were up at, close to 300,000, it's going to be a bumpy ride. And we could go down to 270, up to 320, and back and forth as we kind of seesaw around. The one thing I think is for sure is that we're going to see more volatility in the bond market, in the 30-year fixed rate mortgages, in the stock market. And so we'll probably not be on a very smooth trajectory where it's just going to be up and up and up. It's going to be fits and starts. And I think that you see that again in the sales numbers and just how macro driven this is. It was true, more or less across the state, right? It's not like it's area specific. These are macro trends, and that's why it shows up in the headline state number, because a lot of these markets are looking very similar. There's not a lot of differences in economic progress, right? Like unemployment's low across the board, economy's mostly growing across the board, at least in California and things like that. So it really is just, these swings in expectations and in rates and things like that that end up hitting the market. I do want to kind of caution folks. When we say that the unsold inventory index went up and that we see more active listings, we were just looking through our daily stuff before we jumped on this call. And even though actives are up, it's like we're finally, I said this would be a funny headline because, the actives were like almost back to where they were in complete shutdown. So it's like it's been a recovery, but it's recovered to like the second worst levels that we ever had outside of when rates were 3%. So things are going to get better, but again, those kind of 500,000 years for transactions, I think, are still a ways off. And I kind of joked that I hadn't forced Oscar to go back and revise the forecast yet, but I reserve the right to do so because if we have a couple more bad months where rates stay up at 7.5%, it might be hard to hit that 320 number. I still feel optimistic that things are going to get better. So the general like story of the forecast, I think, still remains, but it might look something more like 300 than 320, depending on what April and May look like.
I'm glad that you put in the disclaimer because people, will continue to take a look at, our numbers, and then of course we'll make adjustment if necessary. Now, I'm glad that you brought up that, of course, people will have to buy eventually. And if you look at, the new home sales numbers, you can tell that people are still very interested in buying, as long as they have, some way to actually get into the market. Like, the new home sales increase actually by about 8.8%, close to 9%, 10%, and that's because, buyers or builders are willing to, maybe make some concessions, maybe price discounts, buy downs, and other incentives. So if you have the right incentives, demand is still there. It's just that sometime we, when people look at the interest rates, people look at supply, they're not seeing as many supply like what you can see in maybe some of the new homes. And that's why I think we're still optimistic. Still optimistic that market will bounce back, maybe not as fast as before, but it's going to take some time.
Yeah, it's like when the inventory is there, the people buy it. And it doesn't really matter whether it's new or existing. And that, again, you're dead on, speaks to that underlying demand. And again, builders are in a place to be a little bit more flexible with buyers, right? And to be able to do concessions or throw in some upgrades to get properties moving. I think they're also just appealing. One of the things that I've noticed in the marketplace is that the buyers that we have are very picky now because they're probably used to looking at price, higher priced properties back when rates were lower. So they like new. They like not having to do stuff. They like being covered by the 10-year builder warranty. We don't build enough, but here in SLO, whatever they build gets sold pretty quick. And I think those new units are appealing, and the combination of that and the ability to, get some incentives and things like that all kind of triangulate in on this increase that we see on the new home sale side. But it also, again, makes me optimistic about the existing home sale side, that when people start to move and things like that, we're going to see that inventory start to go up. But I do think it also kind of speaks to this kind of competitiveness amongst sellers, right? Because you see it going back and forth and wherever the deals actually are, and kind of why it's so important now to have these homes priced right and to do all the comps. And because we're seeing a kind of bifurcation in the market where the homes that look good and are priced really well sell very, very quick. I think we're in the teens now for median days on market in March, and I think that remains true through the first couple of weeks of April so far. But then there's this other cohort of homes that maybe the sellers are too aggressive or over-optimistic, and those ones are sitting. So there's like a gap opening up between the homes that have sold and how long those were on the market, and those kind of surviving listings that aren't selling, that suggests that, the price really does have to be right. The demand is there, but we can't be as kind of aggressive as we could have been when rates were at 3%. And so even though it's a great time to sell, you still have to be strategic. That's a great thing for realtors, right? Because the sellers really need us to see the forest
Absolutely.
for the trees, but it means we need to be up on our game too. So you can remain optimistic, but you need to keep your nose to the grindstone or your foot on the gas as well, because rates are all over the map. Inflation's going to be slow to come down. You see, the buyers come in, go out, decide to wait, decide to rush, depending on these little movements. And so again, the need for expertise has never been more acute, but that just means that it's incumbent on us to really bring it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I
Have we
think
left out
we
anything that we should be letting our members know about? I mean, again, the trajectory is mostly the same. We got some big reports that will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. And of course, we'll be looking at the jobs, and the inflation is probably the biggest ones to watch out for. But so far, we have mostly been following the story that we expected, which for better or worse, I think you've been prepared for by us.
Yeah, we tried, our best, and prepping everyone. Of course, we change. We make some, slight adjustment here and there, and provide. And that's why we have this podcast, to provide you the updates. And also, we have those, real quick, short videos. But as Jordan's mentioned, there are reports. There will be reports that come out, not just from us, but from the feds, from the government. We'll continue to report those, and we'll continue to keep you guys posted.
For sure. And if there's stuff that you need in the meantime, you can always reach out to us. We have a wealth of information on our website, not just this podcast where it's more real time, but formal stuff that you can share with clients, dashboards where you can click through and totally nerd out and go nuts, and videos and all kinds of good stuff. So, but we're happy to do more or different or whatever. Just let us know. And if not, then we'll be letting you know what's happened over the last couple of weeks when we get together next time.
Absolutely.
Until then, thank you so much for listening, and go sell some houses.
All right, see you guys.